Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, Fermentable Planet Earth. Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm your co-host, Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi. We air every Monday night at 7 o'clock p.m.
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. All right.
So. That's never happened before, and I'm sad it did, actually. But anyway, we're back, and we are actually still recovering from New York City Beer Week. It was quite a week, 10 days. So a week and 3 days, and wow. today's episode, we have two very special guests that we know from the beer community, one of which we met on Monday night at a beer dinner at Jimmy's Number 43. You actually might have heard him here on Beer Sessions Radio, John Conzola.
Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Thanks for coming. And TJ.
How's it going?
What's up, man? How are you? First of all, that first night that we had together on Craft Beer Week was pretty cranking and pretty fun at Galapagos.
Yeah, man, pretty epic with you on the sax.
Oh, thanks.
It's awesome. You know, and your Szechuan beer, delicious.
Szechuan paradise. What you guys were pouring was amazing, but our hearts go out to Master Mark Shimeda, who threw his back out with the ice situation at the end.
Yeah, he's hurt.
And he didn't get the chance. He could consider himself lucky for not having to deal with the rest of Beer Week, but we missed him for sure.
And we're talking about Mark and TJ are both at Chelsea Brewing Company. Mark's the head brewer, and TJ's part-time brewing there and leading the tours on Saturdays.
Every Saturday.
Every Saturday. 2 to 6 p.m.
All right.
Free tasting.
Do you have to make reservations to get a tour with you?
No, not on Saturdays. During the week, we make reservations. But on Saturday, 2 to 6, all free.
Right on. What do you teach?
I teach science.
You teach science?
6th to 8th grade in Staten Island.
I'm very excited that you're here with us today because you're going to teach us how to rinse yeast. But
that's
we're going to get to that in the second half. Mary, what were some of your favorite parts of Beer Week this year?
Wow. Well, I met a lot of nice people. I got to see a lot of people, a lot of friends in the beer community that I don't get to see very often. So that was a lot of fun. I had some absolutely amazing beers, particularly at the Brewer's Choice event on City Winery on Wednesday night. Midnight Brett from Allagash, which is made with 100% of their house Brett culture that Jason, the brewer, has developed over the years. A lot, man. There's too many beers to list that I had and were very inspirational for my future homebrewing endeavors. And then actually Josh Bernstein did the homebrew jamboree at Jimmy's Number 43 on Saturday. We got to stop by that, and that was exciting also to see a lot of our homebrewing friends and taste their beer, and as well as meet some homebrewers that we didn't know until that day. But absolutely stellar beers were being poured at that. All homebrewed in somewhere in the five boroughs, I think. Everybody's from...
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, it was a fascinating week, and it was a great time to celebrate what's going on in New York City, but which is just a microcosm of what's happening in the world. Craft beer is freaking awesome, and we're glad to all have it.
Yep.
What some things that happened, people are going to start growing hops more and more, which is how we know John. John, first of all, congratulations. You had a Kickstarter campaign, and you met your goal today. Tell us more about that, and who are you? Why are you? What's going on? Tell us about the four generations, the thing you got the farm. I know more than I should. Hi.
Hey, Chris. I'm a fourth generation farmer from Long Island, and recently, about 3 years ago, I was looking for something unique to bring to the farm, something different. And you know, during college, I developed a love for craft beer. To you know, put two and two together, I saw a lot of the microbreweries popping up on Long Island in New York City. So it made sense for me to plant hops, you know, and to be able to provide a truly local ingredient to the local breweries in the area. So that was kind of what got me started in it.
And so you first planted your first hop plants two or three years ago?
Three years ago.
Yep. And how much did you plant?
We planted an acre of hops. We planted Cascade, Mount Hood, and Chinook.
Okay. And hop plants take about 3 years to harvesting, or you harvested last year, correct?
Yeah, first year we only had a couple handfuls, not much to speak of. And the second year you have a pretty decent harvest, and it's kind of like grapes. It needs to mature. So mm-hmm. by the third year, you're said to have a mature plant. So we're expecting a pretty big harvest this year.
We talked before. You said you were a homebrewer, too. Had you been homebrewing before you decided to plant the hops?
It sort of kind of happened at the same time, you know, meeting people in the beer industry and, yeah. you know, just getting together with people. And it was, you know,
but we're really excited to, you know, to get more hops. I mean, at one point, New York was growing most of America's hops. Was that some of the case?
That's right. And that's one thing that's interesting about New York that a lot of people don't know is about 100 years ago, you know, there's a saying that hops were king in New York. They produced 80% of the nation's crop. In the peak, it was about 21 million pounds a year. Wow. So that was a lot of hops. And upstate New York, you know, now there's a lot of dairy farms. But before all those dairies, most, if not all, those farms were hop farms. And then Prohibition and...
There was a blight, too.
Do cows eat hops?
I think the jury's still out on that.
You come up with these questions.
I don't know. I'm reading the forum. They're, you know, the Men About It forum. These are questions from the listeners.
But Mary's right. They it was a combination of a blight, a widespread blight, and also Prohibition that kind of put an end to New York's hop production, and everything moved out west to where it is today.
Now, and you had your first decent harvest last fall, and in speaking to some of the local brewers on Long Island, and outside of Long Island as well, you had some of the local brewers use your hops. Is that correct?
Yeah, a bunch of the local brewers decided to do wet hop ales, so that was really exciting to, you know, get a beer made with the hops, mm-hmm. and a bunch of them dry hopped, and, you know, we're just looking to keep moving forward and getting more hops in New York.
I'm excited to do that with you down at 508 Gaster Brewery, by the way.
Very excited. We're excited at Chelsea, too.
Yep. Yeah, awesome. Let's all
sounds
do it.
Good.
I love it. A lot of our listeners are homebrewers, and we're talking about a lot of do-it-yourself. Did you find it was a hard thing to do to plant hops? And if, you know, what is it, what's important in growing hops? Give us the 101.
Yeah, for us it was definitely a challenge. I had grown hops, you know, in my backyard, so to say, and did a big variety trial to try to see what worked best in our climate. So for me it was difficult setting up the trellis system and, you know, planting all those hops at once. But the main thing to think about when you're growing hops for yourself or home brewing is, you know, hops like a lot of sun, so it's important to have a sunny spot, and they do like to grow vertically. A lot of people I've seen try to train them horizontally, but it won't produce as many cones, and the cones won't be as a quality of a hop as you would like, so it's important to have a vertical trellis. They don't like wet feet, so that's why they're planted in hills. You'll hear that term a lot. So the best thing is kind of just to mound up some soil, make sure it's always wet, but, you know, not soaking wet. You don't want to plant them in a low spot. They'll die if you do that.
Can it be too sunny? Hours of the day? Like the middle of the field is totally fine? A sloped field, of course.
Yeah, full sun is definitely the best. It's a very photosensitive plant, so it needs the sun to... Actually, the reason hops will wrap around twine and curl up is a function of the sun. It curls in the path of the sun clockwise.
That's fascinating. I did not know that.
Yeah,
very cool. Would an Alaskan summer day be good for hop growing? You know, like 23 hours of sun. You know,
it might be. I don't know. We'd have to. Can we get a caller in from Alaska?
I don't know.
Phone a friend.
My father used to live in Alaska, and man, I used to visit him in the summer, and it's pretty amazing to be playing on the playground until 10:30 and not even knowing.
It would be something to test, definitely.
So, speaking of homebrewers, because I think a lot of homebrewers are also interested in using local hops, I know that New York State passed the Farm Bill last year, which will now allow a farm brewery to develop. They have a certain, I can't remember the percentage, right, but they need a certain percentage of locally grown hops. So definitely I can see you guys contributing to that. But that's I'm right. sure a lot of homebrewers would also be interested in using your hops. Do you have plans for some homebrewing events or?
Yeah, definitely. This past season, it was just a lot for us to harvest the hops. So, you know, we sold mostly to commercial breweries. This coming season, we're getting a packaging machine here in addition to our hops harvester. So we're going to be packaging up some small quantities and getting them out to the home brewers because, you know, to me, home brewing is where it starts. It's, you know, the root of beer culture here in New York. So it's definitely important. For me, at least, to make sure that they can have some local hops, the people that want them. We're planning a couple events out at the Hop Yard in Wading River this season. We're going to do a home brewer day, so we'll have a brew demonstration going on, probably some live music, come and pick your own hops, a couple other things that's kind of still in the works. So.
Yeah, well, let us know. We'd like to definitely share it with our listeners and even come out and join us for it.
And where is Wading River?
It's on the North Fork of Long Island. It's right at the beginning of Wine Country. Exit 68 of the LAE, almost at the end.
Fantastic.
Is there a train? How's the train access?
The train's good. You do need a valid passport to get all the way out there.
Awesome. I know. I unfortunately do not get out to Long Island as much as I should. I go to we judge a homebrew competition out there every year, but yep. I don't get out there as much as I probably should.
My friends
should.
Brewers East End Revival.
What? Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, there'll be some more hop farms out there, so it's more of a reason for you guys to make the trek.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So another question, you know, as a home brewer, just, you know, in general, how do you get a hop from vine to beer worthy, or, you know, to brew, you know, so where can you use it and brew with it? So you have your wet hop thing, but what is the other side of it? And when you say you have a packaging machine, what's the process to get it from there to package?
Yeah, so for a home brewer, you know, you could obviously set it up where, you know, you get your brew going and you pick those hops that day and brew with them. But if you're growing a little, you know, more hops than you'd like to brew within a day, what you'd want to do is dry them down. That's what all the commercial hop farmers do, so it's a more stable form. The easiest way to do that is to put it on like a, almost like a screen window. You don't want it in the sun. If you can get a fan blowing, you know, air, dehumidified air across it, that'll dry them down to the point where, you know, you can package them, you can throw them in a Ziploc and pop them in the freezer for another day.
What is the shelf life of a hop if you do it that way?
If you do it that way without vacuum sealing, I would say a couple months. If you vacuum seal it with like a food saver type of device, much longer. Stored in a freezer, you know, six
We have
months.
One of those, and it's awesome, and it's highly recommended. If you homebrew a lot or even if you cook or anything, but these vacuum sealed things are pretty awesome. How much did you get yours for, Mary?
I don't know. I think we got it on Woot.com, one of my favorite bargain websites. But that you can also get them like Amazon or even your local, you know, hardware store or you know, whatever, wherever you get that, those kind of appliances, Bed Bath and Beyond, kitchen stuff. Yeah, it's definitely worth it. I mean, not only to freeze dry your hops, but we've used it for other stuff as well.
Other stuff.
Like wool for felting, crafty stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, I say yeah, like I'm felting. No, I have not yet felt it. I did knit you a coaster once. It was supposed to be something bigger, but it's a coaster now. That's about the tolerance I had for that.
So going back to the harvesting machine, so that was what the Kickstarter was, for those of you guys who don't know out there, is that hop harvesting by hand is incredibly labor intensive. And you had gone to Germany and found this hop harvesting machine, correct?
Well, I haven't gone yet. Okay. I'm going to be going in a couple weeks.
But you found one.
But we found one in Germany. To harvest a mature plant of hops, it takes about an hour. And if there's 1,000 plants on an acre, it takes 1,000 hours. And you need to ideally do that, you know, in a couple days. So it's a very labor-intensive, difficult thing. And, you know, if we want more hops to be grown in New York and on Long Island, I felt it was important to bring one of these machines here for cooperative use among the farmers so that we can get more hops in the ground and more hops out to the breweries and home brewers.
It looks
out
like
there.
A huge machine. Is it going to be easy to transfer? Is it going to need to, you know, you need to have a shareable truck, like this giant truck too? Or you can schedule days throughout the, you know, just work with everybody?
Basically, it's more so a stationary machine, so we're going to kind of schedule the days out. It'll be located at our farm in Wading River. Once everything's said and done, we're going to have a meeting with some of the other hop farmers and consider putting it on a you know, a flatbed tractor trailer to bring it around. But it is a pretty large machine.
And then do you have plans to expand your hop farm?
Yeah, we're planting another acre this spring. We're planting Willamette, Pearl, and Fuggle. And after that, once the machine's here, we'll probably plant some more.
Great.
And just to recap, the Kickstarter covered just the cost of the machine or just the cost of travel of the machine and anything, and it's still up, and it's still up for 7 days.
Yeah, the Kickstarter is still up until Sunday it ends.
Oh, yeah.
And it covered the cost of the machine and transport here. Once it does get here, since it's a European machine, we need to switch out the electric.
Right.
We need to get new motors for it and do some work. So
So despite reaching your goal, it's still worth it to everybody. Please go and contribute to this because it's awesome and it's still worthy because we met the goal, but there's more costs involved than what that minimum was. So.
And we have some cool prizes out there, a pound of Cascade hops, hop in a pot with an instructional growing guide and a bunch of cool stuff.
T-shirts,
you guys should
mugs.
Check out. Exactly. Yep.
That's awesome. Love it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break on Ferment About It.
We'll be back soon.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. We support Heritage Radio Network because all you folks listening are so genuine, so dedicated to serious food, so much a part of what this country needs to strive to become. People like you are few and far between, and it's obvious to us at Fairway that we've got to stick together. Our desire is that the word gets out about Heritage Radio Network in its support for serious food, foodstuffs that offer memorability and timelessness, authenticity and rarefied quality. This country grew too fast to have established any degree of a heritage. Europe had centuries to develop one. America has not. Heritage Radio Network serves to hasten the evolution of a society that often appears coarse and uninterested. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org.
Yeah.
So we've been talking to John Conzella from Conzella Hops on Long Island about his hop farm, and we're going to move into a little yeast action now.
We did a yeast episode a few weeks back with our friend Christian Loveridge, and we talked what yeast is, about proper yeast techniques when brewing with yeast. But we did not get to yeast washing and how to harvest your own yeast reuse it. And so we have our good friend TJ Schmolka.
It's awesome
about that, and it's awesome. And this is something that I've always, as a home brewer, and now even more so as a professional brewer, somehow been scared of, because I don't want to do it wrong. There's so many variables, and I'm still brewing on a small enough system where actually it's not that much of an extra cost for me to just get a bunch of yeast,
right,
get the extra.
Yeah.
Like as a home brewer, I just buy two packs. I'm like, okay, I don't want to do it even doing a yeast starter because that's just another variable.
Right.
Why do it when I'm willing to spend that extra $7 to keep it safe? But you don't need to do that. You could do these yeast starters, but when you make a beer, you can also reuse the yeast, and it's not even, so that's sometimes when it's at its freshest and best.
The best.
Yeah.
The lab cultures often aren't as good as when you get the yeast kind of tuned into your own brewery, and you get after that third, fourth generation, and the yeast is really cranking along and doing the right thing,
Yeah.
You can go 5 to 10 generations with it, and it will really, starts to peter out at the end, but
yeah,
it does really good.
When is the end? 5 generations, you'd say, roughly?
If you have a lager yeast. A little bit less, anywhere between 3 and 7, and ale yeast anywhere between 5 and 10, depending on how good you treat them and how well you rinse them.
Rinse them. What is rinsing?
So we talked about washing. I said that wrong. Washing versus rinsing.
Okay.
So washing is when you kind of expose the whole trub and the yeast cake to like a low pH situation. And what that is, it kind of, the bacteria can't survive in it, but the yeast can. So it kind of stresses the yeast out, so it's not the greatest thing to do for homebrew. But if you had a really kind of an old yeast culture that had a lot of bacteria in it and kind of smelled kind of funky, you could expose it to maybe 30 minutes of a low pH solution.
And so like an acidic solution, in other words?
Yeah, an acidic solution. And that would the yeast can survive it, but the bacteria often can't.
And this is washing.
That's called yeast washing.
And that's something that professional breweries do?
They do it all the time.
Okay. Yeah. What kind of solution do they use? What kind of acidic solution?
So the most common one would be H2SO4, and they mix it down to...
Which is like a sulfate?
It's just an acidic solution, and they bring it down to 2.5 pH or 2 pH. You can even use vinegar. There's a lot of different things you can use, but that's what they most
often use.
Okay,
so that's a little more complicated and risky.
Yeah, and actually, if you get a kind of a funky yeast like that and you want to wash it, it's almost not worth using it again.
Right.
You might as well just go spend the $7 and go buy a new yeast pack.
Right.
Yeah.
So rinse. So what's rinsing then?
Rinsing is awesome because rinsing, you can take your yeast cake from the fermenter and you can kind of salvage it. And depending on the beer and the fermentation, you can get up to like 3 pitches from that one yeast cake.
Right.
So if you're going to brew another batch or 2 in the same day, you could pitch twice from that, which is great. Or 3 times from that, which is awesome.
Okay, cool.
Because there's so much of a slurry.
Yeah.
Because the yeast count is like so high,
it's
right?
So ridiculously high. A lot of people, what they'll do is they'll try to dump, new homebrewers will try to dump their next wort right on top of the old yeast cake.
Right.
And the problem with that is that the yeast have gone through a process called autolysis at that point, where they basically start to consume themselves. And what you get is you get this kind of meaty and brothy smell from the beer, and kind of weird flavors and smells from the beer. So,
full disclosure, I have done this once.
Me too.
I brewed a brown ale, and then I brewed a Thomas Hardy clone. And I needed a lot of slurry for that Thomas Hardy, that English barley wine. I threw it on there, and it definitely had,
Yeah.
Had that
and,
kind
you
of
know, the best part about it, though, I bet you noticed, was that it started its primary, like, within 5 hours
yeah,
or
no,
like,
it was
less
awesome.
Than that.
I didn't
expect it.
Jumping for joy and cranking.
Yeah.
And then I did that with a Berliner, actually. Yeah. But it worked out beautifully. But, I mean, it soured, like, super quick.
Yeah, some styles require that. But, it's not good if you're... So there is a myth that you can't go from like a stout to a blonde or something like that. And then in this case you can, but if you dump it right on top of the old yeast cake, you can't, because then you have a lot of the previous flavors and all the bacteria in there.
So in this case of rinsing, you can. And what is rinsing?
Okay. So rinsing is going to be where we take the carboy and, you've racked off all of your wort from you're going to move it into secondary, or you're going to start bottling it, and you have that, that yeast cake at the bottom. And it's often like kind of a very light brown color. Mm-hmm. At that stage of the game, what's in there is a lot of coagulated proteins and a lot of hot particles and a lot of dead yeast cells and live yeast cells and bacteria and things like that. So you kind of want to separate the healthy yeast from that brown gook, which is all the other stuff.
Right.
And so I guess what you want to do first is make sure that your sanitization is absolutely perfect. And that's the idea. A lot of times you can mess this up and you'll get some weird stuff growing in there, But the thing you want to do first is, apply generous amounts of hand sanitizer to your hands and spray the carboy down with all of your sanitization equipment. In addition to that, we're not just concerned about sanitization, but we want to try to sterilize as much as we can.
Okay.
So the neck of the carboy, what we want to do is we want to kind of wipe that down with alcohol. And then after that, we're going to want to flame it. Try to let the alcohol dry first, because you want to set your carboy on
right.
fire. Yeah, flame that whole thing down.
You're saying carboy, but you must be talking about a lot of yeast.
Yeah. What do you mean?
You're saying carboy. You're talking about the carboy after we've racked out of it.
Yeah, you've racked out of it.
You're talking about where to get the yeast out of the bottom. Yeah,
yeah, sorry.
So if you have a better bottle, you would not be able to flame, but if you did enough alcohol, wiping, that would probably be...
You can do this with a 5 gallon bucket too.
Okay.
But the best thing about a carboy is that it has that small opening, and that's kind of reduced the amount of shit that can kind of get down in there. Any wild yeast or bacteria that are floating around in the air.
Right.
That's another good point. You probably want to work in a really still air environment.
Right.
The best place to actually work for people at home would be next to their stove, and turn all 4 burners on, and that creates kind of an updraft. And the area immediately next to your stove is going to be almost like lab grade.
That's a nice trick.
Cool.
I like that.
That's why we do this show.
A Bunsen burner.
We're learning stuff.
Yeah. From there, what you're going to want to do, just make sure when you rack off, you leave like a little bit of wort left on top
so that you can kind of swirl it, get a swirl.
Yeah. Depending on the flocculence, so the flocculation effect of this yeast that you're using, some of the English strains are kind of thick and, kind of nasty. You're going to need a little bit more of the beer to do that.
Okay.
But like...
So if you have a high flocculating yeast, you need a little less of the beer left. And if you have a lower flocculation...
Opposite. If you have a high flocculating yeast...
Like 1968, which turns out to be like this blob gook that kind of all sticks together.
Oh, then you need more beer because you're going to have to get it going.
It's harder to break up. Exactly.
Right.
Okay.
So you want to get that nice and broken up. And there's some debates over the next step, but basically... the yeast cake, lays down kind of like rock does in the earth. So like the yeast that are on the bottom are the ones that flocculate first, and they don't attenuate as much.
Okay.
But as the yeast cake builds, you get the ones that are less flocculent and more attenuative.
Right.
So if you just take the top of that, or if you just take the top of the Krausen, you're kind of putting what's called selective pressure on your yeast strain. So the best thing you want to do is kind of take all of the yeast that's in there And there's some arguments over this, but essentially, in my view, you should have all those yeast in there.
Right.
Swirl that up as best you can, and then basically you want to dump that off into a sterilized container. I happen to have an autoclave that I bought on the internet on eBay for $50.
Dude, that's crazy cheap.
From 1950. And it's dangerous and it's awesome. It's stainless steel. We call it the TARDIS. I don't know if you guys know the Doctor Who.
Absolutely.
Feed me.
I'll put all my stuff in there, the collection stuff prior to that. Other people use microwaves. They'll take like a ball jar, they'll fill it with some water, and they'll stick it in the microwave for 3 minutes till it comes to a boil, or they could take the jar and stick it in boiling water. And then once you've kind of done that, I kind of failed to mention the medium that we're going to transfer these into. But you want to, the thing that you want to move the yeast into before you start swirling your stuff around is you want to find kind of a deoxygenated and nutrient-free material. The best thing to do is get some distilled water and boil it.
Okay.
And let it cool. And, prior to boiling, you see the bubbles kind of form on the side of the pot, and that's the oxygen coming out of the water. And if the yeast are given that oxygen, they'll be able to continue fermenting. So we want to pull that oxygen out as much as we can. And if the water comes from the tap, there's often other minerals in there too.
Right.
We don't want them to have any of that. So basically distilled, deoxygenated water that's been boiled and then cooled in a sterile container. And then, so once you swirl that yeast slurry up and then you kind of dump it into that sterile container, here's another point of argument here is basically you can let it settle at that point and let it cool down in the fridge, or you can immediately start to decant it off. And what you're looking to do is you kind of swirl it up in that container, and the stuff that settles first is going to be all the bad stuff that you don't want. Basically, the hot particles and the bacteria and all that stuff.
Because those are heavier,
right? They're heavier than
the healthy yeast.
Exactly. So it'll actually settle into three layers. You'll get all that kind of bad stuff. Then on top of that, you'll get the healthy yeast, which are kind of like cloudy white. And then on top of that, you'll get like a protein and lipid layer.
Okay.
And if you're really nuts, you could pull that protein lipid layer off first. And then what you do is you decant, where you just basically pour off the healthy yeast. And you can do that a few times just to get, you know, a kind of a pure yeast culture.
Right.
And then from there...
And you'll be able to see that. Cause
you'll see it.
I mean, they're different colors and different...
Yeah, yeah.
Very different look.
Look like one of those sand glass
sort of,
things, right?
You'll see it. At the very bottom, it almost looks like peanut butter. But at the very top, it's going to look almost pure white.
Okay.
That's another important point. If you're trying to harvest yeast out of your fermenter and it looks like peanut butter, you should probably not use it.
Right.
It's probably disgusting. The yeast go through a process called autolysis, where they basically consume themselves. And like we said before, it creates kind of a meaty and nasty smell.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after that, you know, basically you could store it, and you could probably store it as long as it's stored pretty cold. You want to keep it down near 34, mm-hmm. not quite freezing. But the colder you go without freezing it, the more dormant the yeast will remain. If they don't have oxygen and they don't have nutrients, they kind of go into a sleep mode mm-hmm. and they just hang out. And what's awesome about that is that they don't mutate. Well, they do, but they don't mutate very much. And also, they won't consume their food source that they already have. They won't go through what's their glycogen and their trehalose reserves, which are kind of like their fat storage, you know, to kind of get them through the long areas. The more dormant they are, the less they'll use, and the more they'll stay in that condition, you know?
Like in the condition that you bought them in from your homebrew store.
Well, the condition
basically.
That you
or, yeah,
after last you fermented.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, I mean, relatively speaking, you know, it's only one generation off, so you'll get more of the effects of the yeast that you bought.
Yeah.
And we're not there. I mean, at this point, and it's so cold, we're not worried about them actually being active and the vessel's not going to explode. So we don't want to have an airlock on or what? What's it? Do we do, like, I've seen people use tinfoil and rubber bands.
Yeah, tinfoil and rubber bands works. Or sometimes, you know, the best thing that I've heard to use is mayonnaise jars. Glass mayonnaise jars with a plastic lid, but I can't find these anymore. So, you know, a ball jar is really good.
Well, and you can buy plastic lids for your mason jars too.
Okay, so. Yeah. Once you do that, you basically just kind of leave them cracked to let the gas out. Just one turn, you know. Otherwise, you might have an exploding mayonnaise jar in your house.
Yeah. And then we have this great healthy yeast that we can use.
Yeah.
Again, and we can keep doing
pitch
this
that
rinsing
directly into a starter.
Directly into a starter if it's not enough for mm-hmm. your next batch.
And you can go from a stout to a blonde with this method if you do it properly.
You can go from stout to a blonde.
Yep. The taste threshold is not that high for this method. So.
So this would be great, particularly like if you're racking a beer into, you know, if you're kegging or racking it to secondary, and then you're brewing, like you said, one or two beers, and mm-hmm. you want to use that yeast.
Yep.
This is ideal,
yep.
Especially if you don't want to worry about keeping it around for a while.
You can leave it for up to 2 weeks in this condition.
Up to 2 weeks in this condition.
After that, you can still use it after 2 weeks, but after that point, it starts to really fall off.
Okay.
That's good to know, too, because you know, I'm not always brewing within 2 weeks, at home at least. But thank you, man. Thank you for coming, and thanks for joining us. John Gonzalez.
Glad to be here.
Please check out our website. We will have a link to the Kickstarter immediately, so that if you'd like to contribute to the hops of hop farming in New York City, or New York State, contribute to the cause and find out more about that. TJ, thank you so much, and you know, go visit Chelsea Brewing Company and visit this man on Saturday just between 2 and 6. You don't need an appointment, apparently.
Yeah, it's good times.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back at 7 p.m. next Monday on heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks for listening to Fomet About It.
Over here.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.